Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome into the second hour of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. 800-282-2882 on the phone lines. We have a bunch of big stories to get to today with you. Biden right now addressing the nation on supply concerns amid the holiday crush to get, obviously, a lot of goods and services purchased. A lot of businesses require or really need their biggest months to be, well, their biggest month to be really right now, December 1st, starting in here. And so we'll continue to follow that as closely as we can. Doesn't seem like the Biden administration has much in the way of an explanation for how things are going to get better. They just keep telling us things will get better. We also got de Blasio opening up the legal injection sites here in New York City, which for somebody who I saw people using heroin on Broadway in New York, right next to where I live, I mean, a block from where I live, during the pandemic for the first time ever. I mean, so drug use in the city, they're getting more and more permissive with drugs. And I'm talking about needles, heroin, middle of the day, broad daylight. And now they're opening up these clinics, these shot centers, essentially, where they're going to allow people to legally inject themselves. When are they going to start trying things that will actually reduce criminality, quality of life crimes, and the general downturn that cities like New York and San Francisco are going through? That's a question that I have for this. But we do have today the biggest story by far still are the arguments on the steps, or the arguments at the Supreme Court. You have activists who have gathered outside. I think that former Vice President Pence touched upon something that we should spend a little of time on, and that is, this is now for the left an issue not just of legality, but an issue of culture. It's something that they tend to even go so far as to celebrate. Right now, there are women activists gathered on the steps of the Supreme Court who I'm sure they're not actually, well, I don't know, but saying they're taking abortion pills, and they're chanting about how happy they are to always be taking abortion pills whenever they want. That's the kind of stuff that is on display right now in our nation's capital. Here's former Vice President Pence trying to speak to this issue.
Today, many on the left believe it is a moral good, that abortion is to be celebrated and encouraged, even as it was on a recent broadcast of Saturday Night Live. It's not hard to imagine that the day will soon come when the radical left begins touting abortion as a tool for managing population growth, as the Chinese Communist Party has done for decades.
Clay, that was actually in the origins, as we discussed, of the abortion movement. That was one of the policy justifications for it. And I do think the country, you know, we were going to talk about this, the country is going to go into a period here of not just turmoil, but some degree of soul searching. And there could be massive political implications for this. On the one hand, we have Biden saying that he wants to ease supply concerns. The polls, I just saw a Trafalgar poll. I think it was at 36% now, yes, the most recent one today. So the Biden administration, the Biden regime, is crumbling before our very eyes. Obviously have not stopped COVID, not good stewards of the economy, the mess in Afghanistan, the wide open southern border, all these areas. Then you have this issue, though, that will turn into a massive mobilization tool in advance of the Supreme Court decision, I think, for the left. They're going to push this as a war on women issue. And I wonder how much that will be able to detract from their losses, particularly among women voters that we saw in Virginia, for example, with the recent election of the governor there.
Yeah, it's impossible to disassociate the political impacts of abortion from, I would say, there are three main issues here: the moral issues associated with abortion, the legal issues associated with abortion, and the political issues associated with abortion. All three of those at interplay here. And it's important to note, and we'll talk to Shannon Bream about this, that this decision will come down right in the midst of the 2022 campaign. So when the Democratic Party has almost nothing else to rally around, will they be able to mobilize, particularly suburban women, by threatening them that abortion is going to become illegal? And by the way, should mention this, Senator Josh Hawley, who is a former Supreme Court clerk, I thought his take on this was interesting. After listening to the argument, this is what he tweeted: I believe this could be the case that finally reverses the great injustice of Roe. It may all come down to Amy Barrett, which I thought was interesting, him being able to put her in the crosshairs. And then one more thing he said, prophecy is always dangerous with any court, but I count six votes to reverse in Dobbs and uphold Mississippi's law. And to kind of, for people who might have missed the opening of the show, I think the most likely outcome is that the Mississippi law is upheld, but it is done so within the construct and context of the Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey decisions. In other words, instead of overruling them, I think they will modify and continue to incrementally chop away at the foundation of Roe and Casey and allow this Mississippi law to stand. But this is interesting. Hawley says it may come down to Amy Coney Barrett, as there may be five votes, because I think you have to presume the Chief Justice is going to not be in favor of overturning Roe, that Amy Coney Barrett may be the fifth vote, and he thinks she is the one that is uncertain.
So, in essence, Donald, if that comes to pass, Donald Trump's victory in 2016 and his appointments to the Supreme Court, specifically Amy Coney Barrett, yes, will be what has ended the regime of abortion this year in this country for 50 years. That's a pretty remarkable legacy for Trump to leave behind after the fact. That would be quite a thing. Remember in the early days of Trump, people saying, "Oh, don't vote for him just for the judges." Well, first of all, I think that the judges were excellent, and that was a major part of the Trump legacy on the good side of things. But beyond that, if it is in fact the case that we have this overturning of Roe, which, as you said, Josh Hawley, who understands the law well, says is very possible. I mean, it's clearly possible. It's not a distant possibility. I mean, it's feeling like maybe more of a 50-50 proposition than it ever has before. So, and it is one more than it ever has been before. So in that circumstance, in that reality, I think you have to wonder, Clay. I think you have to wonder, you know, is it possible that Trump will be the president whose actions, in essence, ended abortion as a constitutional right, not ended it in every state, but as a constitutional right in America?
No, it would be a wild legacy. And by the way, open up phone lines, because I think there's a lot of confusion about exactly what's at stake and what's going on. To your point, Buck, 800-282-2882. This wouldn't end abortion. It would, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, I think there's a huge percentage of people that don't understand this. It would return the right to determine whether or not abortion is permissible to the states. And a lot of people are already trying on both sides to say, oh, this would end abortion forever.
We got a lot of people who want to actually weigh in on this, Clay. We got Diane in Utah right now. Diane, welcome to Clay and Buck Show.
Hey, my question is actually for Clay, the attorney of the group here. I was alive, of course, because I'm in my 70s, so I remember the Roe versus Wade decision. But at that time, nobody thought it would morph into born alive abortion, where, you know, you can have a baby.
Partial birth abortion,
Yeah, partial birth abortion. I'm not sure people would have supported it at the time. So my question is, were there parameters put on that at the time, or did the court just decide, you know, go for it, do whatever you want?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, and again, you have to consider it in context of what happened with Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which was the first significant. I think that was 1992. Roe was 73, if I'm remembering correctly, Buck. And Casey, the focus here was in many ways on, by the time you got to Casey, the undue burden standard of abortion, right, in 1992. And there was an examination of when is a fetus viable. Right. That's a big part of this discussion. And really, that's the essence of what Mississippi is doing. They are saying you can't have abortions after 15 weeks, which is relatively early in a pregnancy. But by the time you get to be 15 weeks, for anybody out there who has gone through having a child, getting the pictures taken inside of the womb, you can see very much of the fetus having developed by 15 weeks. And what has been and this goes to the point on the politics of it, Buck, which is also interesting in addition to the legality. People say, oh, I support abortion, oh, I don't support abortion, whatever your angle might be. But when you start to ask them questions about things such as partial birth abortion, when you have late-term abortions that are occurring, the number of people that actually are supportive of that is minuscule. It fades very quickly. And so the 15-week standard is, I think, if I'm predicting, I think what's going to happen is the 15-week standard is going to become permissible. Everybody will then, in red states, set the 15-week standard, and we'll see what happens with Texas and other states as they try and continue to chip away at the overall right to an abortion that was found in Roe and reimagined in Casey.
All right. Diane, thank you so much for being with us. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation is making the holidays brighter for our nation's Gold Star and fallen first responder families with young children, as well as severely injured veterans and first responders. For many of these individuals and families, the holidays are a tough reminder of the sacrifices made, of the family and friends that have been lost. The foundation is giving away at least a home a day from Thanksgiving through New Year's Eve during its season of hope. With each mortgage-free home, the foundation is delivering on its promise to do good and never forget. For some of these families, they have the comfort of knowing they can stay in the home they picked with their loved one, the home where they made precious holiday memories. For families in a new home, they're creating memories they'll cherish forever. Clay, how do folks get involved and help?
All this is possible because of your generosity. $5 million you guys have donated to Tunnel the Towers. You can support America's greatest heroes and their families. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel the Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. We're going to be going to Washington, D.C., maybe still at the Supreme Court. Shannon Bream is scheduled to join us. She was in the Supreme Court for the arguments made earlier today in the Mississippi abortion case. She covers the Supreme Court for Fox News, has her own show. Talented, smart. We'll see what her read on the questions and what her analysis of the case is. In the wake of her having been able to watch it in person, those arguments, as opposed to just listen to the audio, which many of us were doing. You know, Buck, there are a lot of dumb people in media. Some people might be listening to this show right now and saying, hey, I listen to two of them every day, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton. There might be people out there right now saying,
hey, as long as they listen and we support our sponsors, we don't care what they think.
That's right. We're happy to have you. But I think in the Mount Rushmore of stupidity right now, Joy Behar is right up there. Maybe it's the name Joy. Joy Behar, Joy Reid. There's a lot of Joy stupidity out there. But Joy Behar, every time I hear a clip from her, I think this is the ranting madness of an imbecile. Joy Behar decided, Buck, to weigh in on the First and the Second Amendment.
She's drawing upon her extensive legal analysis background, Clay.
Extensive legal training. Joy Behar, First Amendment and Second. She didn't just weigh in on one amendment. She's an expert on both the First and the Second Amendment. She said that in her opinion, maybe they need to be tweaked. Listen to this.
When the Founding Fathers were busy with the amendments, the First and Second Amendments did not have AR-15s in there, weapons of war, and they didn't have Twitter. So both amendments, I think, need to be tweaked a little bit.
This is really important because this is an argument that people in the media will make. And it shows that they are morons right away. Like, it's great because it's a moron litmus test. Because you would also say the same thing about, oh, well, I guess they didn't have telephones back then.
Yes, so, or televisions, you know, or VCRs.
Or televisions. Yes. And so, you know, how can you know anything about any of these issues and how they would view? Look, the leftists are in a panic right now. And they're going to say a lot of very dumb things. But unfortunately, when it comes to misinformation about the Constitution, that is all the left really does, right? There's not going to be any misinformation bans on Joy Behar saying the First Amendment doesn't cover this and that. The Second Amendment doesn't cover AR-15s.
I wish we had Joy Behar on the show because I would love for her to explain, okay, you're arguing that the First and the Second Amendment need to be tweaked. Like, so it's kind of a big deal to, those are called amendments, but in a larger context, what would you change, Joy Behar? Instead of Benjamin Franklin and George Washington and James Madison and Alexander Hamilton, all these brilliant people that were involved in the formation of the government, we got Joy Behar out there. Joy, what do you think we need to tweak in the First and the Second Amendment? What tweak is a broad phrase.
Whatever makes it so that Clay Travis has to shut up and that Buck can't go shooting with his brothers in Florida, the big scary guns with all the things on them. You know, you grab the thing, it's a machine pistol bazooka, and it's scary.
So however you have to adjust the law, Clay, for that is what should be done.
I mean, what is scary to me is the number of people that lack the basic tools to even analyze the First and the Second Amendment. And is she suggesting that, to your point on like television and you know, I'll give you an easy example. The Fourth Amendment, when it comes to search and seizure, the phone is a fascinating interplay with the Fourth Amendment, right? Are you required to turn over your phone? Are companies required to give passcodes? Can you have access to someone's phone? Because for many people, the phone right now that you carry around with you has access to every aspect of your life, bank accounts, the prescription medication, emails. Everything in your life is now contained in many respects in your phone. Well, obviously, the Constitution, when it was written in the 1780s, did not encompass the idea that a telephone could ever exist. One of the truly fascinating elements of the law book is trying to figure out how to follow the technological path of the law and apply it to modern day technology.
Yeah, the short version of this is
easy political characterization.
When they talk about the press, that they mean the printing press back in the day. So we're not actually just covering freedom of speech isn't just for people that have the typeset and the ink stains and are using parchment paper or quill pens or whatever, right? That's actually not how we do constitutional jurisprudence in this country. But I mean, look, I mean, it almost feels like, you know, this is the slow kid in the class with Joy Behar. So I think we could let it go.
I just and I would love to see a Joy Behar and Joy Reid show. Like the two of them debating the issues of the day, just the two of them.
Joy
no
and Joy?
Staff. Joy and Joy. Bringing joy to the world. I think it would be the dumbest show that's ever existed in the history of television if they put the two of them together.
By the way, I didn't get your take on, do you think that Chris Cuomo is gone for good? What I meant by when I brought up the other CNN guy who was brought back, that's what I meant. I didn't mean Jeffrey Toobin.
Yeah.
We're talking Toobin. I meant the Toobin treatment, to clarify, of putting him on a long suspension and then bringing him back. Not anything else. I think that's what they're probably going to do with Chris Cuomo at CNN, just because, you know, he's got enough connections in the building that I think they'll have him do some kind of a mea culpa and the whole routine. And by the way, he's not even the most annoying by far of the CNN anchors. There's many others I'd rather see out of there.
I think it's a test of CNN's commitment to wokeness, because what would happen if they are fully committed to wokeness is Chris Cuomo would be replaced by a woman of color for his television show. He's too white and he's too male, and we are going to serve penance. We're going to throw Chris Cuomo aside and we're going to replace him with a woman and a minority. That's what would happen if CNN's fully committed to wokeness. I kind of think that they might do that.
Why not give your dog the best, most nutritious meal every day? Well, you can do that by adding something to your dog's bowl every day at mealtime. It's a healthy supplement called Ruff Greens. Ruff Greens, just like you'd expect a product like this, is spelled R-U-F-F. Ruff Greens adds the elements to your dog's diet that you won't get from the traditional kibble dog food we so often feed our dogs. When that dog food is made, it has no live vitamins and probiotics because they got to sterilize it. Ruff Greens adds it back in. It has the enzymes, omega oils, antioxidants, and probiotics necessary for a healthy life. And that compensates for food that has to be stored on shelves for a long time before you come along and buy it and feed it to your dog. Look, this is just going to make your dog happy, healthier, live longer. Ruff Greens will make your dog healthier by making the food better. Folks at Ruff Greens are so confident your dog is going to love it, they have this offer for you. Go to roughgreens.com/EIB, and they're going to give you the first bag free. That's R-U-F-F, roughgreens.com/EIB, roughgreens.com/EIB.
Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. We are joined now by Fox News' chief legal correspondent, Shannon Bream, who is always excellent on this and all legal issues. Shannon, so good to have you on. Thanks for being with us.
It is great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So you were down there today at the Supreme Court covering this. You heard it. You were around it. What were your biggest takeaways for everybody listening in this huge moment for the American legal system and a whole lot more?
Yeah, it's certainly the biggest case probably this term, easily, and maybe for decades. This first real bite at potentially going after Roe v. Wade for the pro-life side. And the arguments were, you know, it's very quiet in there. There are only a few of us who are allowed in the courtroom. So you're watching every face, trying to read every bit of body language in there. And listen, the primary discussion was about stare decisis, to break down, you know, the great googly moogly law school talk. It's just whether or not you can overturn something that's considered super precedent. And it seemed like there were many justices who were open to the idea. We've been watching, you know, some of the newer justices to see where they would go. Justice Kavanaugh talked about the number of decisions the Supreme Court has admitted after the fact. Hey, we got this really wrong, and there is a reason to overturn it. So a number of them seem that they're going to uphold this Mississippi 15-week ban. The question is whether they go that next step to overturning Roe or Casey, and I don't think we can really surmise that from what we heard today.
Okay, Shannon, thanks for coming on. You do fantastic work. You can watch Shannon on Fox News. What you said, you get to be in the courtroom. You haven't gotten to be in the courtroom for a while. Mm-hmm. What? Who are the key justices when it comes to, I'll tell you what I think, you tell me if I'm crazy. There are obviously, it seems, four that would vote to overturn Roe v. Wade, right? At least in my opinion. There are several liberal justices that have absolutely no interest in it. This seems to me like it probably will come down to John Roberts, who I think would be more of an institutionalist and would be more likely to maybe try to chip away at Roe by upholding Mississippi's right to have a 15-week segment here for abortion. And then it might come down to Amy Coney Barrett, one of the new justices. You agree with that? Disagree with it? How would you analyze the sort of voting aspects of this case?
Yeah, I think that's a good read based on what we heard from them today. It's clear that Justices Breyer, Kagan, and Sotomayor are not going to be for this Mississippi ban, and certainly not for going after Roe or Casey. It does seem like Justices Alito and Thomas and Gorsuch seem pretty firm in the fact that this is something that could be chipped away at this point. You know, Justice Kavanaugh today, again, with him pressing on those questions about, look at these cases we've overruled in the past, he seemed to open a window into the fact that that's where he's going. The chief was tough on both sides, as he usually is. He plays devil's advocate sometimes, but listen, he noted that the U.S. is one of the very few nations in the world. He noted specifically, along with China and North Korea, that has these late-term elective abortions, sort of suggesting, is that kind of the group that we want to be in? But he also, he's very hard on all sides, I think, in this. And I do think you're right that he very much is an institutionalist. He's sensitive to the arguments that were made repeatedly today that the court could look political if it decides to overturn Roe or Casey. And then you're right, you have Justice Barrett. She's new. And listen, the argument against her, among other things, when during her confirmation, is that she's going to be the vote to overturn Roe v. Wade. There's no mistaking about that. But she had very measured questions for both sides. And it's a big, big decision for any justice to say we're going to go after one of our own precedents. So I do think those are the two to watch.
We're talking to Shannon Bream, chief legal correspondent for Fox News, who was in the court today as oral arguments were heard on the Mississippi abortion restriction. Shannon, Justice Alito asked Prelogar, the Solicitor General on the Biden administration side of this, if it's Alito asked her if it's ever okay for the court to overturn something simply because the precedent is egregiously wrong, I believe, is the quote here. Mm-hmm. So it's just so wrong. And Prelogar said no. What do you make of that?
Yeah, that was interesting. I think she was trying to be more specific to this case and obviously, you know, kind of protect her flank on that argument. But it's clear when you talk about things like Plessy v. Ferguson and other Brown v. Board of Education, I mean, that when you go and you have, you know, cases that follow previous precedents that the court says, wow, this was a mistake. We might have thought it was right at the time, but history has shown us and, you know, our evolution as a society has shown us we've really got this wrong. I don't think it's possible to say that any, you know, case is not at some point potentially, you know, the subject of being overturned. I think she's very much trying to protect herself on Roe and Casey. And I think she was saying, like, listen, even in these cases, you still have to look at what is been decided by the court as a fundamental constitutional right. And there was a lot of argument about that, a lot from Justice Thomas about, well, what kind of right? Privacy, equal protection, what are we talking about? And I think that she's trying to say, like, no matter how you view Casey, whether you like it or not, the most recent abortion decision, even if you think it's egregious, it's still what she said, to overturn it would be essentially putting millions of women at risk of being treated not equally as citizens of this country.
We're talking to Shannon Bream. She was in the court for the argument today. She is Fox News chief legal correspondent. Okay, Shannon, so let's kind of rubber meets the road here. If give us a time for a couple of questions here. When will, in your opinion, this actual decision come down? If the decision comes down and they uphold the Mississippi case but don't overturn Roe v. Wade, what does that look like going forward? If they overturn Roe v. Wade, what does that look like going forward in the immediate aftermath?
Mm-hmm. So for timeline, you know, they have this first secret vote behind closed doors the Friday after they hear their cases. So this will be the initial case, you know, where the justices secretly behind closed doors have this conversation and make their initial votes. Now, those can change over time. We all know that they do some horse trading sometimes, that you can be, you know, persuaded by molding your opinion, writing in a certain way that you bring on another vote, you change how people feel. I think this is one of those things that'll come in the last week, which is the very end of June. I'd be surprised if it comes before that. That's the end of the term. And I think this will probably take us that far, or at least very, very well into the spring or early summer. Now, if they uphold the Mississippi 15-week ban, some other states who have bans that are later and are pro-life in nature and maybe have, you know, pro-life-leaning legislatures and governors, they may go and say, like, hey, let's move ours back to 15 weeks. If they go ahead and strike down Casey and Roe, there are trigger laws in a number of states that work both ways. Some states have said, if those are overturned, then great. Our state doesn't recognize a right to abortion. We ban it, with very few exceptions. Other states, you know, have trigger laws that move in the other direction, saying if Roe or Casey was struck down, we then codify it as a state law that you have certain abortion rights here. So there's some things that would happen automatically, but I do think if Roe and Casey were struck down, you'd see a number of pro-life leaning or red leaning states quickly take action to scale back abortion access as much as they could.
Shannon Bream of Fox News, chief legal correspondent. Shannon, really appreciate you joining us today and sharing your perspective and expertise. Always good to talk to you.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
That's Shannon Bream. We want you to know that the Salvation Army is dedicated to doing the most good by meeting human needs wherever, whenever, and however they can. Every year, they help more than 30 million Americans in poverty battle daily challenges. And you can help ensure hope marches on this holiday season. Do you know that right now you can dial #250 on your phone and say Salvation Army? If you do that, you'll have the opportunity to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message that links to a donation form, and you will be able to help millions of people. In fact, the Salvation Army serves more than 30 million people in the United States by providing food, shelter, and financial assistance to people in need. Your help will ensure hope marches on for hardworking families in your own community. All you have to do with your phones right now, dial #250 and say Salvation Army. That's #250 and say Salvation Army. Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Some people think that Joe Biden is ignoring the supply chain crisis out there, and that as a result, because his former transportation secretary, I guess current transportation secretary, was on paternity leave for so long, that the supply chain issues are going to get worse and worse. But Joe Biden is on the case, guys. He understands what might be going on, and he wanted to talk about the fact that there might be a bit of an issue with Christmas presents, Buck. Joe Biden wanted to address whether the supply chain shortage would impact whether kids get Christmas gifts this holiday season, and here is what our dear president said.
Now, I can't promise that every person will get every gift they want on time. Only Santa Claus can keep that promise. But there are items every year that sell out that are hard to find. Some of you moms and dads may remember Cabbage Patch Kids back in the 80s or Beanie Babies in the 90s or other toys that have run out at Christmas time in past years when there was no supply chain problem. But we're heading into a holiday season in very strong shape. It's not because of luck. We averted a potential crisis by figuring out what needed to get fixed, and then we brought people together to do the hard work of fixing it.
Buck, do you think it's fixed?
Oh, I'm pretty sure it's not fixed. And beyond that, it's not just supply chain isn't just an issue that you see with the absence of certain goods. It's also very much something you see with the price of goods and the transportation involved in that, right? So on the one hand, you may be able to get certain things, but you might be paying more for it than you have in a long time. That's also obviously inflation is a component of that as well. But if it's more difficult and takes longer for you to get stuff because it's harder to transport it, it's likely that it's going to be more expensive as well. I mean, this is amazing. In as dynamic and complicated an economy as the United States, we tend to have so many economic illiterates making many of the most important decisions. You know, you would think that that would be, because whenever you ask somebody, people that are casually interested in politics, you know, well, what is your top interest? The economy, all the polling shows, you know, economy and jobs. That's the most basic thing. And yet we have people, and I'm not saying we have to have, you know, economics professors, by the way, you'd actually probably have a worse situation than having some random person you pull off the street. But you want someone with a basic foundational understanding of how these things function. I do not believe Joe Biden has that. I don't think anybody who knows Joe Biden thinks he has that. And then you get into the, well, and this is a question that comes up so many times, who are the advisors around Biden, Clay, that is he's entrusting with the actual decision-making on this? And you see someone like Pete Buttigieg, and you go, oh, that's not making me feel better.
No, it's not making me feel any better. Do you ever have any Beanie Babies, by the way?
I don't even know what a Beanie Baby
is. You don't know what a Beanie Baby is?
I mean, I've heard of it. What is a Beanie Baby?
It's like a pound puppy. Do you know what a pound puppy was?
I don't know. I'm almost 40. I got no kids, Clay. I don't know what these things are.
No. These are things that existed when we were kids. Do you know what a Cabbage Patch Kid is?
Yeah, dude, I was all about Teddy Ruxpin back in the day.
Oh, I remember Teddy Ruxpin.
Teddy Ruxpin was awesome.
So Beanie Babies were wildly popular, like little beanbag animals or different objects. And some of them ended up costing thousands of dollars. And so I'm sitting here thinking, you know, there have been a lot of crashes in terms of not being able to find the right gift. I feel like I haven't gone out, and let me be clear. We have a lot of presents that we buy, and my wife buys like 99% of presents for everybody. Like, I sit around, I have no idea what's going to be in the presents when they get open. But the supply chain shortage, it feels like Biden, it's only December 1st, right? It feels like he's trying to get way in front of the idea that some of these toy shelves are going to be stripped clean. And he's going to argue, oh, this is just like what happened with the Cabbage Patch Kids, or this is what happened with the Beanie Babies. When those are individual, specific, really popular gifts that everybody was trying to get. Tickle Me Elmo back in the day was one of them as well. And what we're going to see is a universal shortage of a large number of products out there that parents are trying to go buy.
Just remember, though, that even when you truly see these things happening, whether it's empty shelves or higher prices, the Biden administration, the Biden team response, the regime will come to you and say, no, what you think you're seeing and experiencing is not actually what you are seeing and experiencing. There's something else going on here. We're doing a great job. You just don't realize what a great job we're doing. I don't know how long that routine will last, though, before their polls plummet even further. Because once you start to get down into like 30% approval territory or, you know, low 30s.
36% today in Trafalgar.
Right. Now you're down to just the hardcore Democrat base that's really behind this presidency, and going into a midterm election, that's going to be obviously not good enough. We haven't even talked today about the other problems that are completely unsolved. Obviously COVID, but even beyond that, the border. And what is it exactly that the Biden team thinks is going to happen by spending more money? He just said before, when he was giving his speech, right when we were on air, Biden was addressing people about the shortage, you know, the crisis, the supply chain issue, shortages. And he said that independent, he always loves this independent economy. I mean, I can find an economist that'll tell you that, you know, the economy of Mars is great. Like, you can always find someone who'll say anything. But he says independent economists are telling everybody that the spending bill will lower inflation. I mean, this is really, sky is red, the world is upside down. Really, massive government spending outlays are going to lower inflation. That is Biden today, everybody. If you're wondering what kind of grasp he has on economics, I mean, this is really like pouring more water on something will not make it wetter.
You know what is interesting, too, about that 36% approval rating that Trafalgar came out with? Buck, this came out last week, and I meant to hit it, and I just grabbed it. Have you seen the numbers on Donald Trump versus Joe Biden in all of the toss-up states? Listen to this. Right now in Arizona, Trump would be up, this is according to a most recent poll of the battleground states, 10 points in Arizona. He's up 9 points in Georgia if the election were today. He's up 14 points in Michigan. He's up 11 points in Pennsylvania. And he's up 13 points in Wisconsin. We talked yesterday some about whether Biden might run or whether he might not run. But these are seismic swings that are moving in favor of Donald Trump's direction. And it's one thing to say that Biden has a 36% approval rating. But if you actually look at the battleground states, he's far worse than he is on the overall nation, because obviously you're rolling in New York and California and places that are extremely left wing where Biden is more popular. But where the election will get decided, Trump has opened up double digit leads in many of these states.
And everyone should just know, and our listeners, you know, on WOR in New York and KEIB in Los Angeles and KSRO in San Francisco, I mean, they all know that it doesn't matter what happens with Biden, because they, the Democrats who live around people in those cities who are Republicans, conservatives, listen to this show, the Democrats believe that Donald Trump was a fascist. I mean, remember all those articles? He was a fascist, a Russian stooge.
He was a Nazi.
So they convinced themselves. That's when we talk about the Trafalgar poll and getting down to the 30s for Biden support. Anything is better than what Trump is in their mind. So it doesn't even matter how bad things get. They'll always justify their vote that way. For the saner, for the reasonable, the rational, this is an administration that has no upside to point to and a whole lot of downside.
There's no doubt. When we come back, we've talked a lot about the big case going on in the Supreme Court. You just heard from Shannon Bream saying there won't be a decision probably till the end of June. What could the political ramifications potentially be for that? We'll break that down for you. We'll talk a little bit more about all of the chaos that is going on surrounding Andrew Cuomo and all of the woke brigade right now. Good stuff for you to close out the show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Maybe we'll even discuss Buck being a victim of a crime spree.
Oh no.
And what has happened to his beloved scooter.
It's gone.
New York City is a cesspool, and somebody's got a scooter they don't deserve.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.